after the last Twitter files. After the last Twitter files came out, it was just okay. It's Christmas. They're not going to just dump a bunch of things over Christmas, but they did. And it went from, like, I think the first two videos on the Twitter files are, like, I think, did, like, the first two. I did, like, Musk Till Dawn, the Twitter files, and then I was like, it's okay. Because they keep teasing this thing. It, like, Musk keeps saying, wait till you see the Fauci files, right? He keeps saying that. That's the big thing. And obviously, right-wing people, they don't like Fauci. They don't like Fauci because of COVID. So, whereas I don't like Fauci because of AIDS. You see, because he was the guy that made some pretty poor decisions around that, let's say, in America. But we're not going to talk about it. So he keeps teasing that. And so I was like, okay, well, that's going to take ages. That's all going to have to be legally cleared. So we can just hunker down for the holidays and forget about it. And who's going to be releasing Twitter files in, you know, all through December? They released like another 10, like, tweets. And have you seen how they do the Twitter files, right? Why don't you just create a pseudo Substack thing on Twitter? I don't know, Elon. Like, you're talking about 4,000 character limits on tweets. Like, please, this was just so so tedious, because it's like one sentence and a link and a screenshot, and then there's like 37 of them in a chain. And sometimes, because of the indexing, a verified user might jump ahead of the reply from the original thread creator, and then you have to click on the tweet separate and da-da. Oh, it's garbage. It's a garbage way to disseminate information that's ostensibly meant to be important. But anyway, after the last two Twitter files videos I did and the Elon Musk Till Dawn stuff, I did get loads of positive feedback. I always try and give it to people in a non-biased fashion. I'm a believer in the concept of the mono party. I find both sides of the US government repellent. I hate the political class. And I certainly think it's an issue that big tech essentially got infiltrated by arms of the government. Certainly, Watergate wasn't as bad as this. And this is probably the most significant revelatory thing in terms of America being a surveillance state since the Snowden leaks with Glenn Greenwald, for me. That's my read on it. And maybe if you come along for this ride, you'll agree. Maybe you won't. It doesn't really matter. You can look at the information and make it up for yourself. So, the Twitter Files 3 came out. And this was about the man that you just saw briefly on your screen there, Donnie Darko. The Twitter files, the removal of Donald Trump. Now, if you remember, if you were in the trenches, right, I'll give you a brief summary of what you're supposed to believe. Okay, so here's what happened, apparently, according to the powers that be. The elections happened. Joe Biden became the most popular president of all time in America. Certainly not through ballot harvesting or anything like that. And certainly not because of the changes to to mail-in ballots and early mail-in ballots made during the pandemic. And Donald Trump lost without there being any concerted effort to suppress anything whatsoever ahead of time. And Joe Biden won, and ahead of him being sworn in, Donald Trump, probably being funded by Russia still, decided he was going to have a coup d'etat. And by a coup d'etat, an armed insurrection to overthrow the American government and instill himself as God Emperor for life. We came this close, people. This close to losing democracy. America nearly fell and you didn't even know. Now, forget minor details such as, like, there's only been 3 people charged with firearms offences out of the 1,000 or so that were part of this insurrection. I mean, again, I'm a bit of a novice at coup d'etats, but guns are probably a good idea if you're having one. Just a thought. But anyway, fortunately, one of the things that helped stop the fall of democracy was Twitter deplatformed Donald Trump, because Donald Trump was using tweets to basically rile up the troops in his evil fascist army to go to the White House and overthrow the government. And so Twitter took that away from him just in the nick of time. Otherwise, there would have been a God Emperor right now, probably the start of the 40K universe happening in the US. That's the story you're supposed to believe. Of course, certain aspects of it have a kernel of truth. Other aspects are just wild, ridiculous fantasy designed to emotionally manipulate you into agreeing with the state and the state apparatus of the media. So, Matt Taibbi, who you will notice, Matt Taibbi is not a Donald Trump fan. We've talked about this in previous videos, but it's worth restating for the stream. Matt Taibbi, certainly not a Donald Trump fan. He wrote a book about Donald Trump called Insane Clown President, okay? He is known for having attacked the financial sector, calling them vampire squids. He covered all of the Occupy Wall Street movement, and by almost any stripe except by the modern ludicrous behavior of the modern journalist set, he would be considered a dyed-in-the-wool lefty, okay? But now he's apparently a conservative that, quote, runs PR for the world's most wealthy man, end quote, because he's taking a broad objective view about what happened around that time. So Matt Taibbi was, I believe, the guy that, if memory serves me correct, the original guy that did the Twitter files. He's now actually one of the most followed journalists on the entire platform. He's up to 1.7 million followers, which is a ridiculous reach for any journalist, any writer on the platform. Few have that kind of, you know, ability to disseminate information. You know, there's like him, Glenn Greenwald, people like this. And they're people I think have earned that right because they are trustworthy. Anyway, he specifically wanted to do a thread about what happened around the removal of Donald Trump and the deplatforming of Trump. And of course, you will find many things that, oh, right, okay, this challenges the mainstream narrative. So, the world knows much of the story about what happened between riots at the Capitol on January 6th and the removal of President Donald Trump from Twitter on January 8th. I'll show you what hasn't been revealed, the erosion of standards within the company in months before January 6th, decisions by high-ranking executives to violate their own policies, and more against the backdrop of ongoing documented interaction with federal agencies. This first installment covers the period before the election through January 6th. Tomorrow, Schellenberg MD will detail the chaos inside Twitter on January 7th, and on Sunday, Barry Weiss will reveal the secret internal communications from the key date of January 8th. Whatever your opinion on the decision to remove Trump that day, the internal communications at Twitter between January 6th and January 8th have clear historical import. Even Twitter's employees understood in the moment it was a landmark moment in the annals of speech. You can see here, is this the first sitting head of state to ever be suspended, was the question on their internal Slack communications. Now, something you have to be mindful of when we talk about these things is the type of people that were allowed on Twitter. I'm of the belief that if a political figure, no matter how reprehensible you might find them, if they are suitably positioned within their government of suitable global importance, they absolutely should be on Twitter even if they say crazy shit. They cannot be held to the same standard as a civilian. Because I need to know what they're saying. If you're a citizen of that country, it's relevant to your interests. And if it's a country like America, you know, the people that just like fuck up the whole planet and do whatever they want and invade countries for oil and all this other stuff. Yeah, it's important to know what the president's fucking saying, where his mind might be at any given time. Because no matter where you are on the planet, you can't really hide from the Americans, right? So, you know, for me, I saw time and time again people saying, Donald Trump's violating the rules. Donald Trump's violating the rules. He should be banned. He should be banned. It's like, no. And also, of course, this ridiculous double standard. The, you know, Ayatollah Khomeini is like talking about how he wants to bring Israel down and stuff like this. And that's totally allowed, is it? You've got, you know, during COVID, you had Chinese state officials say, you all believe that COVID came from China, but actually it came from American Marines stationed in China. It must have come from an American lab. And that was totally fine. Not deleted, right? Wasn't COVID misinformation, incredibly? Meanwhile, a doctor with a PhD saying, there's some interesting markers here hearing it. it's misinformation. It's misinformation. I don't think putting a sock over your nose is going to stop it. Misinformation. So there was double standards at play all the fucking time on Twitter and just on social media in general. The only reason we're hearing about Twitter is because it's had a change of ownership where, the new boss has decided, fuck it, it ain't my dirty laundry. I don't mind dangling it out the window. Obviously, we're now starting to find as well from legal proceedings, if you go look into this, we're never going to get a Meta files, but we might get, as we are, Facebook is being compelled to give over emails and documents while there's investigations about censorship on the platform. And today, at the time of recording this, it was revealed that actually they went and sent censored a political commentator because they said they weren't going to get a vaccine, right? And so and it was done at the behest of an American government official that was in close contact with Meta. Make of that what you want. Anyway, as soon as they finished banning Trump, Twitter execs started processing a new power. They prepared to ban future presidents and White Houses, perhaps even Joe Biden. The new administration, says one exec, will not be suspended by Twitter unless absolutely necessary. The fucking hubris of these tech fucking losers, right? As stated in our rules and policies, it's clear another account is being used for the purposes of evading a ban. It is subject to suspension. For government accounts such as POTUS and White House, we will not suspend those accounts, but we will take action to limit their use. However, these accounts will be transitioned over to the new administration in due course and will not be suspended by Twitter unless absolutely necessary to alleviate real world harm. So in other words, now, and keep in mind, we've already seen with the Hunter Biden laptop story and how that was suppressed, they literally banned a White House press secretary from access to one of the most sizable platforms they had on their official account based on sharing a story that was legitimately reported by a newspaper in America. And so now you've got a tech company. It's like we are willing to block access to the official president and official White House account on our platform. And even if it impacts on the Biden administration as they come in, which is crazy, right? Twitter executives removed Trump in part over what one executive called the context surrounding actions by Trump and supporters over the course of the election and, frankly, the last 4+ years. In the end, they looked at a broad picture, but that approach can cut both ways. It's Vijaya Gaddy. It's Gaddy, I learned now. I mispronounced their name loads on all the other videos, but it's Gaddy, like that guy who says these nuts. Ha! Gaddy! That's how I remember it now. So thanks for him existing, and thanks for the people that that corrected me and pointed that out. Hi Vijaya, I'm working with redacted on my team to put together a doc to share with you a POV from research, ours, academics with whom we've been working, etc., on Donald John Trump's language as coded incitement to further violence. And as you're gonna see, the way people remember it, because the lie has been told over and over again, is that Donald Trump directly incited the insurrection. Now, I agree, by the way. I think the rhetoric in American politics during the Trump years was a disgrace to everyone. It was a disgrace to the political class. It did not serve the people of its country. Everybody should be thoroughly ashamed about the levels it dropped to. And obviously, that's continued in the Biden years because Trump's still waiting in the wings. Spoiler, he will absolutely not be the Republican candidate and has no viable path to presidency in 2024. But anyway, it wasn't just Donald Trump that said inflammatory things. I've got a list of some of the quotes that were essentially incitement to political violence from Democrats, and people didn't seem to mind all that much. And of course, remember Scalise being, gunned down and nearly dying by somebody that was a hardcore, Bernie supporter. And people, I said it many times. I said it after Charlottesville as well. It's like, The political rhetoric that was getting slung around was absolutely, radicalizing people. I don't necessarily agree with the concept of stochastic terrorism. I think it's too broad, and it's fundamentally incompatible with free speech. But I do think there was, everybody had a responsibility to dial it down, and they didn't. And people absolutely got hurt as a result of that. Riots happened as a result of that. And certainly January 6th, you know, there is an unquestionable path to January 6th based on everyone's political rhetoric, not just Trump, but everyone's. Just Trump was never going to be the bigger man, because Trump is a small, petty, boorish man. It goes on. In the meantime, here is our quick take. The decision on whether or not to pull that particular tweet or use that as a last straw for Trump depends on many factors, including one, the overall context and narrative in which that tweet lives. We currently analyze tweets and consider them on a tweet-by-tweet basis, which does not appropriately take into account the context surrounding. You can use the yelling fire into a crowded theater example. I wish people would stop using that example, because it's a terrible example. It's a terrible example because it's not true. You can shout fire in a theater. Absolutely. Of course you can. You will not go to jail for that, by the way. That is not against the law. Context matters, and the narrative that Trump and his friends have pursued over the course of this election, and frankly the last 4+ years, must be taken into account when interpreting and analyzing that tweet. And two, the larger question is around our moral imperative and decision as a company, which user sentiment should not drive based on number one. I believe that this tweet, it says, does violate our terms of service. The bulk of the internal debate leading to Trump's ban took place in those 3 January days. However, the intellectual framework was laid in the months preceding the Capitol riots. Before January 6th, Twitter was a unique mix of automated rules-based enforcement and more subjective moderation by senior executives. As Barry Weiss reported, the firm had a vast array of tools for manipulating visibility, most of all of which were thrown at Trump and others pre-January 6th. And again, this is on the previous Twitter Files video. If you've not seen it, you can go and watch it. They had a bunch of moderation tools that they actively lied about. They actively lied about shadow banning accounts. We know that that's a lie now. They are going to try and wriggle out of it when they invariably, when these, now that we've got a House Speaker and some House committees are going to be coming and, you know, for the next 2 years, they're going to lie about it and go, well, what is a shadow ban? How do you really define a shadow ban? You know, they're going to wriggle out of it that way. But they actively lied to Congress and said there were no shadow banning tools on Twitter, and they absolutely were. They used a variety of stuff that you can see for yourself. And by the way, it wasn't a surprise to me, because if you remember with the Twitter hack, I covered that, and there they were. They had they socially engineered access to a Twitter employee's account, not even a high level one, and they had access to those tools, and they could access people's accounts and see their DMs. Staggering. Anyway, as the election approached, senior executives, perhaps under pressure from federal agencies with whom they met more as time progressed, increasingly struggled with rules and began to speak of violations, as pretexts to do what they'd likely have done anyway. After January 6th, internal slacks show Twitter executives getting a kick out of intensified relationships with federal agencies. Here's trust and safety head Yoel Roth lamenting a lack of generic enough calendar descriptions to concealing his very interesting meeting partners. And you can see there, it happens I'm a big believer in calendar transparency, but I reached a certain point where my meetings became very interesting to people, and there weren't enough generic meeting names to cover. Anyway, let me know. Very boring business marketing. That is definitely not about Trump. Pretty much. Definitely not meeting with the FBI, I swear. It's all right. We always knew it was a fucking Fed honeypot. Did anyone doubt it for a second? These initial reports are based on searches for docs linked to prominent executives whose names are already public. They include Roth, former Trust and Policy Chief Gaddy, and recently Plankwalk Deputy General Counsel and former top FBI lawyer Jim Baker. And worth just giving you a little refresh there about who Jim Baker was. Jim Baker was the former counsel for the head counsel for like the FBI, an FBI lawyer. He came into Twitter and became their head counsel as well. And when Elon Musk started leaking the Twitter files, he was still employed by Twitter, and he was looking at the files as they were coming out and undoubtedly leaking information to his cronies enemies in the press and his friends in the Fed and probably some of his political friends in the DNC. They got wind of it based on the journalists spotting, like, who's this Jim guy? Who's that's looking at the stuff? Who's looking at these files as we're collating them? Elon Musk put two and two together, which he should have realistically done ahead of time, and they fired Jim Baker and he's no longer at the company. Also, journalists came out after Jim Baker got fired and were going, oh God, Elon Musk's ruining Twitter. He's firing all the good people. He's just an innocent person. It's like, I have never in my life seen journalists rally round to defend federal agents and pretend it's fucking speaking truth to power. It's actually pathetic. One particular Slack channel offers a unique window into the evolving thinking of top officials in late 2020 and early 2021. On October 8th, 2020, executives opened a channel called US 2020 XFN Enforcement. Through January 6th, this would be home for discussions about election-related removals, especially ones that involved high-profile accounts, often called VITs or very important tweeters. I'll give you a moment to just hold your lunch down there. Hey everyone, starting tomorrow, October 9th, until November 15th, this channel will be used for the following reasons related to the US 2020 elections. Trends identified that require scaled investigations, high profile account escalations that potentially require PII soft interventions, scalable solutions, edge cases for XFN consultation, highlight tech issues like bugs, tools, gyro tickets. This is an enforcement channel for terms and service and TWS to help speed up our response related to election issues over the coming few weeks. And of course, what were election issues within the context of Twitter and social media at that time? Well, look, Donald Trump and his inner circle, which towards 20, as we approach the 2020 election, by the way, had dwindled to a group of sycophantic crazies that probably at one time were like political power players and quite sharp, but he was just left with the dregs. It was Bannon, it was Giuliani. He'd driven away anyone that was actually kind of plugged into the machine and maybe could have helped him win the election and cut off some of this stuff. They were all in on the laptop and what they were calling the November surprise. He believed that ultimately he was guaranteed to win and the only way he could lose was if it was rigged. And of course, when it started to go south, we got all the memes, didn't we? Stop the count! Stop the count! Stop the steal! We had all of those other cunts. I don't know, by the way, how bad your political party has to be for a guy who makes pillows. For a guy who looks like fucking Paul Bearer, the Undertaker's manager. Oh, yes! Oh, yes! And makes pillows for a living. I don't know how bad your political party has to fucking be to fucking him to be a serious speaker, you know? But that's what you were left with at the end. This was that fucking lawyer, I can't even remember his name, who was like, we're gonna release the Kraken, it was the machines. By the way, Pillow Guy is still saying the machines are to blame for Donald Trump losing, and he's gonna prove it, and even Republicans are going, look, enough with it. It's like, oh, I'm gonna take one of them pillows, and, you know, so it's fucking Trump, like, the whole Trump mistake popped in 2020 because he went from being a winner to a loser to a whiner about losing. And his whole thing was, we're going to do so much winning, you're going to be sick of winning. You remember that quote, right? Well, you didn't win. You're not a winner. And now you're crying about losing. Ugh. And you're still crying about losing. It's been fucking 2 years. So, anyway, the election stuff that they're talking about was essentially anybody that even suggested, and this is what I mean, right? So, like, I know what went on. I know why Biden won, and it was fair and square, because you have to understand the widespread ballot harvesting efforts are not illegal in most states. So, you know, you might have your own feelings about ballot harvesting. You might have your own feelings about how during the pandemic the DNC was super sharp, got on that shit. Yeah, let's do mail-in ballots, actually. Because if you know anything about voting patterns, you know that Republicans like to vote in person on the day, make sure there's no shenanigans. I go down and vote for my president. And it's like, you know, they're old, a lot of them, Republican voters. So it's like a fucking day out. It's a little adventure for them. And they go and they put the tick in a box, don't they? And they fucking, yep, that's me doing my civic duty. Whereas Democrats, it's, you know, it's a mix. It's an eclectic mix, you know. And they want, they've got potheads in there and students, you know. And they want to just fucking, they just want to get their vote done and dusted. They want their vote to count. Stand in the weather for fucking 10 hours, getting rained on, probably not, like, not so much. All of a sudden, it's less, it's not as important to a fucking 18-year-old, right? Ah, they don't really count anyway. So you might think ballot harvesting's fine because at the end of the day, it's your vote, it's your opinion. Other people might think if it's not you doing it, you can't preserve the integrity of the election. Irrespective, under the law, what happened during the election was totally fucking legal. And if Republicans had been fucking on the ball, they would have seen it coming a mile off. But they weren't on the ball because it was Trump, Giuliani, Bannon, just in some fucked up fever dream, thinking a laptop was going to get them over the finish line. If you're from Europe and you don't know what ballot harvesting is, I'll give you a brief explanation. And, you know, it's not relevant to the Twitter files, but it's just a good bit of information to know if you're not sure of the practice. So if I'm eligible to mail in a ballot, which, by the way, you are, and especially under the pandemic changes, they expanded the mail-in ballot system. And you had more time to get a mail-in ballot in. You had early mail-in ballots. You had what they call absentee ballots. That's the other one. What you do is you basically just put in, you take your voting form, you fill it in, you can mail it in, right? But there are operatives, activists for the political party that will come to your house, pick up your ballot, pick up your vote, put it with all the others, and they will deliver it to the ballot box for you. You don't even have to put it in the mail. They will come and get your vote. And they particularly do this in, like, old people's homes, right? If you're old and you want to vote, maybe even the effort of walking to the nearest ballot box, the nearest post box, it's too much for you. So it's seen as a service, right? So they come and they get it. But what ends up happening is, obviously, some of those votes wouldn't come through without the ballot harvesting, but that's why they call it harvesting. They come, they get everyone's votes, and sometimes they overstep boundaries. They knock on doors. Have you voted? Do you want to fill in your vote now? Some people have been caught picking up empty ballots and doing this, but this has always gone on in American politics. I've talked about this loads. You know, it's not unheard of for dead people to vote. It's not unheard of for people to, like, vote multiple times. It's like, the American electoral system is so far behind the rest of the world. It is a joke. It's got nothing to do with, like, oh, Democrats are rigging the elections, or oh, Republicans are... It's got nothing to do. It's just the infrastructure is just garbage. It's just garbage, and it's been garbage. When I say America is a banana republic on steroids, it's been that way my entire life. It's got nothing to do with political parties, nothing to do with affiliation. I'm not affiliated with any of them, you know. I just prefer some candidates to others. That's the only thing you could ever say about me. And it's regardless of party, but it's a completely outdated system. And so basically, and this is why, by the way, even in a country like Brazil, with a huge landmass that's very diverse in terms of how sparsely populated some parts are and how densely populated other parts are, you will notice when we sat up and watched the fucking Brazilian elections while the CSGO Major was going on, and I was on Discord and hanging out with some of the guys watching it come through, you will notice that even Brazil are capable of having a countrywide election and getting the result to you by the end of the day. So if that doesn't tell you all you need to know about where America is, right? Because Brazil has a lot of problems. Even the most staunch, proud Brazilian would tell you that they've got a lot of problems. If you go back and look at some of my really old political content, you'll see me doing it. I brought it up, you know, every election. 50 dead people voted in Florida, and, you know, it never brought up the same level of shrieking and hysteria it did from Donald Trump. Because it's just what happens in a broken system. Not every vote will get counted, and sometimes votes will get counted twice, and sometimes dead motherfuckers are going to vote, and sometimes people who aren't eligible to vote in a state are going to vote. Maybe even some people who aren't eligible to vote in the country are going to vote. But that's what you get when it is literally still operating on a system of a piece of paper in a box. Anyway, back to the Twitter files. There was at least some tension between safety operations, a larger department whose staff has used a more rules-based process for addressing issues like porn, scams, and threats, and a smaller, more powerful cadre. By the way, This is the fuck me, Richard. You're going to be here all day. Right, I say cadre. I was always taught that word is cadre. But I see Americans on telly and they go cadre. A cadre. It's a cadre, right? It's always been a cadre, surely. Or is this like what they've... Because I'm a boomer, they've changed everyone's name. Like Tutankhamun and Boadicea, who's now Boudicca and Tutankhamun. Is it like that? UK, when it comes to matters of English, yes, the UK is always right. Although, I will add, you know the whole argument about aluminium, aluminium? You know how Americans say aluminium? And we say aluminium, and everyone goes, why are they pronouncing it like that? If you go and look into it, when they discovered it on the periodical table, or whatever you science types call it, the original brand name from the dude who discovered it, he called it aluminium. And then it got changed a couple of years later to aluminium. But the original was right, so it is aluminium. Or aluminium. Whatever the Americans say is the right one. But fuck them anyway. We won't tell them that. We'll keep that secret. Right, anyway, a larger department whose staffers used a more rules-based process for addressing issues like porn scams and threats, and a smaller, more powerful cadre of senior policy execs like Roth and Gaddy. The later group were a high-speed Supreme Court of moderation, issuing content rulings on the fly, often in minutes and based on guesses, gut calls, even Google searches, even in cases involving the president. Here's one example. Breaking news. 50,000 Ohio voters getting wrong absentee ballots. Out of control. A rigged election. This is Donald Trump on October the 9th of 2020. Somebody there. That would be in violation, right? And Yoel Roth said, if the claim of fact were inaccurate, yes. But it looks like it's true. And he links to NPR, right? So NPR aren't going to carry water for Trump. So, yes, it turns out this is, again, how fucked the American political system is. That, yes, 50,000 voters can be given new absentee ballots. Or rather, given the wrong absentee ballots and have to be given new absentee ballots. During this time, executives were also clearly liaising with federal enforcement and intelligence agencies about moderation of election-related content. While we're still at the start of reviewing the Twitter files, we're finding out more and more about these interactions every day. Policy Director Nick Pickles, by the way, some of the dudes in this fucking sordid little tale, you got Special Agent Elvis Chan, Steven Seagal, now Policy Director Nick Pickles. I mean, it's like a Ryan Johnson Knives Out story, isn't it? Yeah, it's Pickle Nick. So Policy Director Pickle Nick is asked if they should... say Twitter detects misinfo through ML, human review, and partnerships with outside experts. The employee asks, I know that's been a slippery process. Not sure if you want our public explanation to hang on that and see. Are you comfortable saying it? It's what we just read. Can we just say partnerships? Not sure we'd describe the FBI Department of Home Security as experts. Is what Nick Pickles says. Good on you, Pickle Nick. Anyway, this post about the Hunter Biden laptop situation shows that Roth not only met weekly with the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security, but with the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. And you can see here, Yoel Roth has checked in. Here's what they said. What's new for you since our last check-in? Hacked materials exploded. We blocked the New York Post story. Then we unblocked it, but said the opposite. Then said we unblocked it. And now we're in a messy situation where our policy is in shambles. Comms is angry. Reporters think we're idiots. And we're refactoring an exceedingly complex policy 18 days out from the election. In short, fuck my life. Weekly sync with FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and DNI, RE Election Security. The meeting happened about 15 minutes after the aforementioned hacked materials implosion. The government declined to share anything useful when asked. Monthly meeting with FBI was briefed on several ongoing investigations. So, this is Yoel Roth again coming in saying we used the hacked materials to block the story when it wasn't hacked. I've stressed this every time we bring this up about the Hunter Biden laptop story, which I'm not going to regurgitate all the details of. I've done video after video after video about that. I've explained why it's important. I think if people say it isn't important and it's a nothing burger, they're being disingenuous, because the issue isn't Hunter Biden. The issue for me isn't Hunter Biden, you know, getting blown or smoking crack. The issue is some of the emails that are on there. And the bigger issue is that it was blocked when it didn't meet the criteria for hacked materials. Why didn't it meet the criteria for hacked materials? Loads of people post the same thing every time it's mentioned and referenced on my videos. I don't think leaving it in a repair shop gives the repairman the right to leak it to anyone. Well, first of all, if he was concerned about the contents and he was a whistleblower, you wouldn't be saying that. You wouldn't be saying that if he had proof of Trump committing human rights violations or some of the similar shady shit that people had a public right to know about. But of course, the problem was Hunter Biden himself had signed a document that said, if I do not come to claim this laptop within 60 days, it becomes your property. Also, here are the passwords, here's the access. So fuck anybody that thinks this was hacked materials. It absolutely wasn't hacked by any metric. Ostensibly, it belonged to the repairman at the point he decided to share it with the FBI and other political agencies in Trump's orbit. Stop posting that. Right. Roth's report to FBI, DHS, and DNI is almost farcical in its self-flagellating tone. Which is true. Some of Roth's later slacks indicate his weekly confabs with federal law enforcement involved separate meetings. Here, he ghosts the FBI and Department of Homeland Security, respectively, to go to an Aspen Institute thing, then takes a call with Apple. Now, as I've told you guys repeatedly as well, they're all in cahoots with each other, all these big tech companies, so that shouldn't surprise you. But it is funny that he couldn't even be asked anymore to talk to the... They talked to the FBI and Department of Homeland Security so much about trying to get Trump that they were sick of it. It wasn't even a unique thing. It wasn't even worth taking the meeting every time they called. It was something you could blow off to go on fucking holiday, essentially. Here, the FBI sends reports about a pair of tweets, the second of which involves a former Tippecanoe County Indiana councillor and Republican named John Basham, claiming between 2% and 25% of ballots by mail are being rejected for errors. And you see, we just got a report from the FBI concerning two tweets, which it linked, related to the shredding of mail-in ballots. This is proven to be false via a PolitiFact check. Do we have a moment ready for this one? I believed it was deemed no violation on numerous occasions. And look, this is a tough one for me because American politics is so skewed from what a healthy political system looks like. It's certainly bad when political officials lie about vote counting. That is true. It's certainly, you can argue, it could potentially subvert the outcome of elections by motivating a base to vote that maybe wouldn't, or discouraging a base to not vote. These things can all have impact, you know. It's like if you declare that you're the winner, people who were going to vote for the other person running against you might not put a vote. But I will say, this has been going on in American politics again for as long as I've followed American politics. People say crazy shit, you know. You want to think about Bush and Gore and all that bullshit. By the way, an election I do think was rigged, you know, and how long that got dragged out in the courts and all the stuff that was being said around that before everyone just decided, come on, it's the mono party, let's all just go back to business as usual so we can all make money and get back to doing what we do best, which is defraud the American people and self-enrich. You know, it's tough for me. Should these things be violations? Should they be banned? I don't know. It's hard. It seems to me to be in, like, the people I want held accountable for spreading misinformation aren't politicians. Politicians lie all the time, and you're meant to know that. You're meant to be smart enough to know that politicians lie. The people who aren't supposed to lie are journalists. If journalists are lying, I want them held accountable. If politicians are lying, it's fucking Tuesday. That's a key difference for me. personally, but maybe not everyone agrees with that. You're never going to get a political system in America or anywhere in a Western democracy where if politicians lie, they're held accountable for those lies. You know, look at this Santos character. Look at Biden. But like, how many more times is Biden going to tell that story about how he flew into South Africa and got arrested trying to meet fucking Nelson Mandela? Just an out-and-out fabrication, by the way. So you're never going to have a Western democracy of any kind where politicians lying is because you've got to lie to win. It would change the game too much. The FBI's second report was concerned for this tweet, and you can see the Democrats are in complete panic as their massive push for vote by mail is backfiring on them. Two things are unfolding: an unexpected number of registered Republicans are returning ballots, between 2 and 25% of ballots are being rejected for errors. The FBI flagged the tweet, then got circulated in the enforcement Slack. Twitter cited PolitiFact to say the first story was proven to be false, then noted the second was already deemed to be null vile, which we just saw. The group then decides to apply a learn how voting is safe and secure label, because one commenter says it's totally normal to have a 2% error rate. Roth then gives the final go-ahead to the process initiated by the FBI. Now, these things to me are problematic. Unfortunately, the reality is we know in recent years the FBI has become a partisan. There have been a number of instances where, you know, FBI agents have been vehemently anti-Trump and other such things. So the FBI coming in and saying what politicians can and can't say during an election cycle, and of course it's only going one way, they're not trying to preserve election integrity, they're just trying to shut down lies from one side of the party, and all other lies from the other side are fine. But for me as well, I also don't want Twitter determining, I don't want some Twitter pleb. I keep talking about this, like, what is your expertise? Who the fuck are you to say PolitiFact is like a benchmark, trustworthy publication? Who the fuck are you, a Twitter, like, administrator, to say a 2% error rate's perfectly normal? What the fuck do you know? What's your expertise? You've got to put, you know, like, are you a political fucking science expert with years of government, experience? No, of course you're not. Examining the entire election enforcement Slack, we didn't see one reference to moderation request from the Trump campaign, the Trump White House, or Republicans generally. We looked, they may exist, we were told they do, however, they were absent here. In another example, Twitter employees prepared to slap a mail-in voting is safe warning label on a Trump tweet about a postal screw-up in Ohio before realizing the events took place, which meant the tweet was factually accurate. This is, again, another one of Donald's classics, the rigged election tweet that we saw earlier there. And yet we can't put a warning on it because he was telling the truth in a rare instance. Very well done on speed. Trump was being visibly filtered as late as a week before the election. Here, senior executives didn't appear to have a particular violation, but still worked fast to make sure a fairly anodyne Trump tweet couldn't be replied to, shared, or liked. And if you look at the tweet, you can see, big problems and discrepancies with mail-in ballots all over the USA. We must have a final total on November 3rd. And this is another thing that happened, to jog your memory. One of the things that we were being told in the media and being told by the government was, like, you know, listen, it might take us a while to count all the votes. And obviously, again, the Republican way of thinking is, I want to know on the day. And they're going, well, no, if we've still got boxes of ballots lying around, we are going to have to count them. And indeed, that's what happened. If you remember, we had a rough idea about which way the wind was blowing, but we didn't get it on the night. We all went to bed and woke up, and we were still waiting on which states were going to go to Biden and which ones were going to go to Trump. Anyway, that tweet was put into limbo, essentially. See, what's the team's recommendation? We agree with it. We're flagging it right now with leadership. We'll set up a call. Okay, approved. And basically, they stopped anyone being able to share that tweet. So they suppressed the sitting president's opinions about things on Twitter. A seemingly innocuous follow-up involving a tweet from actor James Woods, whose ubiquitous presence is argued over Twitter data sets already in a Twitter files joke. Twitter is suppressing this tweet by the president. Here's a screen grab. And so he tweeted out a screen grab of it. Afterwards, angrily quote tweeted about Trump's warning label. Twitter staff, in a preview of what ended up happening after January 6th, despaired of a reason for action, but resolved to hit him hard in the future. You can see there, that's what they say. And this was like just a constant thing that was happening to accounts. It was pretty clear. I've talked about this a lot. Moderators on these platforms will all go the same way. And that is that it will start out where they want to be rigid with the rules and then they just start making it up as they go along as they encounter new things. There is no guiding principle beyond we can just sort of do what we want because it's our platform and that's what everyone presupposes and agrees upon until it happens to them. Here's a label applied to Georgia Republican Congresswoman Jody Heiss for saying, say no to big tech censorship, and mailed ballots are more prone to fraud than in-person balloting. It's just common sense. You can see they added a warning label to that. And Twitter teams went easy on Heiss, only applying what they call soft intervention, with Roth worrying about a wah-wah censorship optics backlash. And you can see that's literally what he called it. They said, should we suppress that tweet? He said, no, we're not going to do that. I think going too far down the rabbit hole of labeling critical speech, i.e. critical of our handling, is dangerous. It becomes a self-reinforcing wah-wah censorship cycle. But they still took soft intervention on it. And to be fair, I don't know what the problem with that tweet is personally. I don't think that's in the purview of what an actionable tweet should look like. I don't think she's saying anything insanely controversial. I would imagine it is easier to have a fraudulent ballot by mail than it is if you go in person and vote. It would also be easier with voter ID, but Americans argue about that endlessly, despite the fact, you know, we've got it in all these other countries across Europe without any issues or arguments. Meanwhile, there are multiple instances of involving pro-Biden tweets warning Trump may try to steal the election that surfaced, only to be approved by senior executives. This one, they decide, this is so disgusting and terrifying. This is from Elijah Daniel. They're going to try and steal the election. This is in response, by the way, to Chief Justice John Roberts administering the judicial oath to Amy Coney Barrett when she officially joined the Supreme Court after she replaced Ruth Bader Ginsburg when she died. So it was totally okay, by the way, to say Republicans are stealing the election by appointing a Supreme Court judge, right? It was totally okay to say that. By the way, the way that they called it, like, packing the court, it's not. It was just appointing a judge, right? Like, you know, all of that was all fine on Twitter. You could say that till the cows come home. There was no problem. Anyway, that's understandable, they say in their discussion. Even the hashtag, steal our votes, referencing a theory that a combination of Amy Coney Barrett and Trump will steal the election, was approved by Twitter executives because it's understandable and a reference to a US Supreme Court decision. You have to understand, Democrats came up with a number of insane conspiracy theories around this time that, to me, were just as absolutely as ridiculous as what Pillow Man was talking about. They believed that by putting Amy Coney Barrett in and having Trump say it was all about, you know, the election was rigged and all about, what was going to happen was Trump was going to go to the Supreme Court and say, ratify me as president anyway on the basis that the election was rigged, and they were going to somehow do it. Now, that's a demented conspiracy theory. That was as demented as the PP tape, which didn't exist. That was as demented as being installed by Putin on the basis of a few Facebook pages. All of it just demented lunatic conspiracy theory that was allowed to sort of pass into being common parlance and the common understanding of how everything went. Meanwhile, if you would have said, if you were a Republican voter and you were saying stop the steal, release the Kraken, all this other crazy shit, you were a lunatic, you know? In this exchange, again, unintentionally humorous, former Attorney General Eric Holder claimed the US Postal Service was deliberately crippled. This was, I'm sure you remember this one. Right, so this was Eric Holder, remember, Attorney General. This is what he said. He said here, it's too late to use the mails. Given Supreme Court rulings, I urge everyone to now vote in person. Early vote or use drop boxes. Protect your health, but don't let the court deliberately cripple postal service, deprive you of your most precious civil right. Plan your vote. They had this hard turn because there was a number of news stories, and I think a lot of them turned out to be false, where they were saying that mail-in ballot boxes were being guarded by police, or they were being seized, or they were being locked and closed, and there were some postal worker issues, right, and all just all of this stuff that was coming out. And the bottom line was, again, this conspiracy theory that if you do vote by post, it's somehow dangerous now. It was absolutely not shut down. It was absolutely peddled as being the gospel truth. There was no issues with it. And it just shows if you have a left-leaning conspiracy, it's fine. If you have a right-leaning conspiracy, you're mad. Later in November 2020, Roth asked if staff had a debunk moment on the Smartmantic vote counting stories, which his DHS contacts told him were a combination of about 47 different conspiracy theories. That, again, is the release, the crack, and stop the steal, the voting machine, pillow man bullshit. On December 10th, as Trump was in the middle of firing off 25 tweets saying things like, a coup is taking place in front of our eyes, stop me if you've heard that one before, Twitter executives announced a new L3 de-amplification tool. This step meant a warning label could now also come with de-amplification. So in other words, when they put on, don't listen to Trump, he's crazy, elections are safe, everything's fine, American democracy's fine, just go and vote by mail and it's all fine. When they were putting that, any tweet they would put that on was also being de-amplified, so it wasn't going into as many people's feeds. You would have to click on the tweet directly if you wanted to see it. Even followers of the person that made the tweet might not see the tweet. That was what their de-amplification tools were. Hello, everyone. I wanted to give you an update on some of our enforcement policy, enforcement options for tweets containing the civic misinfo that we've seen. It's been decided that tweets that we've manually reviewed and determined need a label will now be subject to level 3 L3 de-amplification, further restricting the extent to which the tweet can be shared. The current batch of entity IDs will soon be used for automated labeling work, but I've created a new batch of entity IDs for the labels that we've been using the most during the past couple of weeks. Labels that we've only rarely used or that have been deprecated already haven't gotten the L3 update. Some executives wanted to use the new deamplification tool to silently limit Trump's reach more right away, beginning with the following tweet. This tweet here was Trump got 11 million more votes. This was Jim Jordan on the news. Newsmax, I'll add, which Newsmax, for those that don't remember, Newsmax were like this new, like, upstart news company. They wanted to be like a Fox News, but done with a startup. They went all in on the fraud story, on the pillow guy theory, on release the Kraken, stop the steal. They had to settle a lawsuit. They had to pay out a ton of money. Complete garbage, garbage reporting, complete, you know, they just interviewed a bunch of crazy people and published all of their stuff as fact. So Newsmax interviewing Jim Jordan. However, Donald Trump is just linking to the clip, isn't he? It's not what he's saying directly. So yes, he's amplifying it, but it's not him. It's not his bad. It's Newsmax's bad. It's Jim Jordan's bad. But anyway, they decided they were going to limit it immediately and put a warning on it. And there you had it. 47 we're up to. Fuck me, this was a long one. I wasn't expecting it to be this long. However, in the end, it didn't really matter. Trombone guy. I had to use older, less aggressive labeling tools, at least for that day, until the L3 entities went live the following morning. The significance is it shows that Twitter in 2020, at least, were deploying a vast range of visible and invisible tools to rein in Trump's engagement long before January 6th. The ban will come after other avenues are exhausted. In Twitter docs, executives refer to bots, e.g., let's put a bot on that. A bot is any automated heuristic moderation tool. It can be anything. Every time a person in Brazil uses green and blob in the same sentence, action might be taken. So in this instance, it appears moderators added a bot for a Trump claim made on Breitbart. The bot ends up becoming an automated tool, invisibly watching both Trump and apparently Breitbart. So whenever there's a combination of things being said about certain topics, in combination of people sitting, so for example, if Breitbart talks about Trump, that's immediately going to get flagged, maybe set up for these L3 protections. So what we're starting to see now, by the way, if it's not abundantly clear to you, is Twitter made choices, editorial choices, to limit people's expression, to limit publications, you know, reach all in one direction. That was the choice they made. And they did it all on a, you know, behind the scenes technological basis in the exact way they lied about having done. And they did it all during an election cycle. Now, again, as I said, yes, Trump's full of shit. Breitbart's full of shit. They're all full of shit. But the bottom line is, so are Democrats. They're full of shit. CNN's full of shit. MSNBC's full of shit. And Twitter allowed one type of shit and not the other type of shit. And that's a problem. It has to be a problem on a fair and impartial platform. Because they have to be fair and impartial, remember, because of this has now gone beyond, in my opinion, the Section 230 protections you have. This isn't like we're banning people for doing harmful things on a platform, which you will always have the right to do on any platform. This isn't even an association issue. This is actively making choices to quietly de-index information during an election cycle to one half of the political fucking paradigm in America. So it's not great, even if you acknowledge that, yes, these people are liars. It's not great or good what they've done, in my opinion. There is no way to follow the frenzied exchanges among Twitter personnel from between January 6th and 8th without knowing the basics of the company's vast lexicon of acronyms and Orwellian unwords. To bounce an account is to put it in timeout, usually for a 12-hour review or cool-off. I've had that happen to me on a couple of occasions when I've been mass-reported by Overwatch losers and Rocket League losers. Interstitial, one of many nouns used as a verb in Twitter speak, denialist is another, means placing a physical label atop a tweet so it can't be seen. This is PII, I think it says there, has multiple meanings, one being public interest interstitial, i.e. a covering label applied for public interest reasons. The post below also references a proactive V, i.e. proactive visibility filtering. This is all necessary background to January 6th. Before the riots, the company was engaged in an inherently insane, impossible project trying to create an ever-expanding, ostensibly rational set of rules to regulate every conceivable speech function that might arise between humans. This project was preposterous, yet its leaders were unable to see this, having become infected with groupthink, coming to believe sincerely it was Twitter's responsibility to control as much as possible what people could talk about, how often, and with whom. The firm's executives on day one of the January 6th crisis at least tried to pay lip service to its dizzying array of rules, but by day two, they began wavering. By day three, a million rules were reduced to one. What we say goes. And that is Matt Taibbi's initial summary of how we get to the unpersoning of Trump on Twitter. One thing you can say about Matt Taibbi is he's pretty fucking verbose. Right, Michael Schellenberger. He follows up with the actual banning of Trump and how it all went down in the build-up to January the 8th. This was the fourth part of the Twitter files. Now, again, Michael Schellenberger, he's been doing these alongside Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss. And he's another journalist that's written, again, multiple books. You can see, like, he is another lefty by almost any definition, I would say. He wrote a book about the problems with the Californian health care system called San Francisco. He's done a lot of pro-environmentalist movement work as well, if memory serves me correctly. So, in general, I mean, I would say probably the most conservative-leaning journalist that out of all of the people Musk selected is probably Barry Weiss, and she was a never-Trumper. So, this is the removal of Donald Trump on January 7th. So, Twitter executives were under a lot of pressure to basically permanently ban Donald Trump. This was like the huge flag-waving victory for all the lefties. What they wanted to do was ban Trump, get rid of him, and that would be it. Then, you know, ding-dong, the witch is dead, everyone would have been celebrating. And so every time Donald Trump said anything, even if it was, like, certainly within the purview of what you can see on Twitter, everyone made a big deal about it. Every time he insulted someone or came up with a funny little nickname for one of his political opponents, there was a huge shrieking hysterical. Is this what we want from a president? It was just nonsense every time he opened his mouth. And obviously, as we got closer and closer to the election, and Trump was saying, look, this election's bullshit. That was basically the people wanting to turn the screw and, get him banned. So, on January 7th, senior Twitter executives, they created justifications to ban Trump, whole cloth. There weren't actually any under their policies. They decided to seek a change of policy for Trump alone, giving us a whole separate set of rules for Trump. I can empathize with this. Reddit did this to me. I have been the victim of a big tech company inventing a whole set of rules for me. I was talking about it on Twitter the other day. Basically, like, they've just refused to comply with any, like, subject access request or GDPR request. Made multiple ones. They've just ignored me. Like, boilerplate emails back. So, yeah, and it's worth mentioning as well. Yeah, I mean, that's, like, a good point, Peppermint 14. Remember how everybody said, all the lefties said he rigged the election with Russian help and Russian collusion in 2016. Not a conspiracy theory. This is what I mean when I say about, like, everybody lies. But but right now, the way the cultural zeitgeist is, it only really goes one way as being bad and the other way is acceptable and plausible and possible and you don't sound demented. But anyway, they decided to create a change of policy for Trump alone, and they expressed no concern for the free speech or democracy implications of a ban. It says catch up with Matt Taibbi, which we've just plowed through. Holy fucking shit, I bored myself to tears. Sorry about that. But anyway, so let's get to the meat of it. For years, Twitter had resisted calls to ban Trump. Blocking a world leader from Twitter, it wrote in 2018 on one of its blogs, would hide important information and hamper necessary discussion around their words and actions. I can't even remember in 2018 what had sparked off that particular go around with Trump. But there was always something, you know. I was out there, you know, I was living in America at the time. And basically, every time Trump tweeted, every time he said anything even remotely, you know, like a little bit edgy, a little bit insulting or abusive or whatever it was, basically, people would call for him to be banned and Twitter would come out and say, we can't ban him, he's the fucking president, come on. But after the events of January 6th, the internal and external pressure on Twitter CEO, it was Jack at the time, Jack Dorsey, grows. The former First Lady, Michelle Obama, tech journalist, Kara Swisher, the ADL, high-tech VC, Chris Sackett, and many others publicly call on Twitter to permanently ban Trump. And you can see that's Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL, where you can see, this is where Chris Sackett said to Jack, you've got blood on your hands, you and Zuck. For 4 years, you've rationalized this terror, inciting violent treason. It's not a free speech exercise. If you work at those companies, it's on you to shut it down. This was Michelle Obama's incredible, insightful contribution when January 6th was happening. You can see here, I'll read to you what it says. Seeing the gulf between the responses to yesterday's riot and this summer's peaceful protests. Oh, God. Do you remember those peaceful protests? Do you remember the peaceful protests when everything was on fire and people died and people Molotoved fucking police cars and they burnt down a fucking police station and they were outside the White House and Donald Trump had to go into the bunker and then everyone laughed about it. Like, remember all those peaceful protests? And the larger movement for racial justice is so painful, it hurts, and I cannot think about moving on or turning the page until we reckon with the reality of what we saw yesterday. True progress will be possible only once we acknowledge that this disconnect exists and take steps to repair it, and that also means coming to grips with the reality that millions voted for a man so obviously willing to burn our democracy down for his own ego. I hurt for our country. And I wish I had all the solutions to make things better. I wish I had the confidence that people who know better will act like it for more than a news cycle or two. All I know is that now is the time for true patriotism. Now is the time for those who voted for this president to see the reality of what they've supported and publicly and forcefully rebuke him and the actions of that mob. Now is the time for Silicon Valley companies to stop enabling this monstrous behavior and go even further than they already have by permanently banning this man from their platforms and putting in place policies to prevent their technology from being used by the nation's leaders to fuel insurrection. And if we have any hope of improving the nation, now is the time for swift and serious consequences for the failure of leadership that led to yesterday's shame. And of course, obviously, it's just a few days after January 6th day, which has become a holy day with Democrats, a holy day in the DNC, where they peddle all the same lies about things that happened on that day, which are all provable lies, but it doesn't really matter. It's the mantra. It's a religion at this point. It's got nothing to do with fact. But I want to add, this was part of the, there was a huge wave to ban Trump at this particular point on January 7th, and he got banned from tons of platforms. He got banned from Twitch. As I said, I joked about it on the day it happened. I said I was looking forward to seeing his Fallout New Vegas speedrun. That's gone now. He got banned from Pinterest. I'm sure he had a fucking little arts and crafts section of fucking little Donald Trump, you know, knickknacks he used to make in his spare time, you know. He got banned from everything simultaneously. Pro Trump subreddits got shut down, nothing to do with the man. Everyone on January 7th pressed the button on the things they wanted to do anyway and used the insurrection and the inciting of the insurrection as the excuse. You can see Intelligencer said it's time for social medias to ban Trump from the platform permanently. There was a ton of stuff like this. And this is the interesting one that you should really be looking at, because the ADL, right, brought up the tweets from Trump in their tweet, in their rebuke. And if you actually look at what he said, it's like kind of interesting. So you can see here, Donald Trump, what he says there is, this was after the ADL released the statement. Their statement says, as ADL has said again and again, extremists must be taken at their word. First, there was a volatile rhetoric online, and then explicit calls to violence, and now people are acting on those calls in the nation's capital and flagrantly breaking the law. It must end now. Now, in regards to that, the explicit calls to violence thing, this is what I wanted to talk a little bit about earlier. There was a number of inflammatory statements made by mainstream Democrat politicians, which certainly were on a par or worse than anything Donald Trump said. These were all comments that were made by politicians. Ayanna Pressley said, there needs to be unrest in the streets. Kamala Harris said during the riots around the extrajudicial murder of George Floyd, protesters should not let up. There were no calls for calm over that. Of course, Maxine Waters, she said, if you see anybody from that cabinet, meaning, you know, Republicans, in a restaurant, in a department store, you get out, you create a crowd and you push back on them. And Nancy Pelosi said, I don't know why there aren't uprisings all over the country. Maybe there will be. All of these quotes, by the way, were all determined to be perfectly within, you know, reasonable political discourse. Nobody batted an eyelid. Apparently, you can only radicalize people one in one direction. But anyway, if you look at the what Jonathan Greenblatt was complaining about here, he says there are two bare minimum tweets after the Capitol has been stormed by extremists, and it's too little too late. It's overdue to suspend real Donald Trump until his account stops promoting disinformation and inciting violence. And this is the thing they don't ever sort of bring up, and it's like super weird to me, like, that this has to get memory hold. But if you look, this, by the way, the timing of the tweets, the first one is, he says, Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our constitution, giving states a chance to certify a correct set of facts and not the fraudulent or inaccurate ones which they were asked to previously certify. USA demands the truth. That tweet is deemed to be the incitement, as we'll get to a little bit later, along with a few others he made on that day. But he also said, please support our Capitol Police and law enforcement. They are truly on the side of the country. Stay peaceful. And I'm asking for everyone at the U.S. Capitol to remain peaceful, no violence. We are the party of law and order. Respect the law and our great men and women in blue. Now, the timing of that one in the middle was before anyone had even entered the buildings, and yet people say that Donald Trump was guilty of a direct incitement. Now, a direct incitement, I'm not coming along for that, right? I think, obviously, His rhetoric certainly didn't help. No one's rhetoric helped. But I think it's a bit ridiculous to lay the whole clusterfuck that were the 5 years from even in the build-up to Trump's election entirely on his doorstep when you had a hysterical media class and two corrupt parties and a fucking outrageous demagogue at the centre of it all. Dorsey was on vacation in French Polynesia in the week of January 4th to 8th in 2021. Must be nice. He phoned into meetings but also delegated much of the handling of the situation to senior executives, Yul Roth and obviously Vijaya Gadde. As context, it's important to understand Twitter's staff and senior execs were overwhelmingly progressive. In 2018, 2020 and 2022, 96, 98, 99% of Twitter's staff political donations all went to Democrats. In 2017, Roth tweeted that when Trump won, there are actual Nazis in the White House. In April 2022, Roth told a colleague that his goal was to drive change in the world, which is why he decided not to become an academic. On January 7th, Jack emails employees saying Twitter needs to remain consistent in its policies, including the rights of users to return to Twitter after a temporary suspension. After Roth reassures an employee that people who care about this aren't happy with where we are. This obviously is something I brought up before. Jack Dorsey, I think, was so tuned out by the whole bullshit. He's just a hippie. He didn't want to be embroiled in politics in any way, shape, or form. He's obviously a lefty. He's obviously a progressive. I don't think when he came on board and helped build Twitter, he ever envisioned it essentially becoming a neural network collective consciousness for the entire world and being probably the most important site on the internet itself for American politics and political discourse. I don't think he envisioned any of that. And I think when it hit that critical mass of that being the state it was in, he was like, you know what? Fuck this. I don't want to be here. I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to be lying to Congress. I don't even want to be in front of Congress. I don't even want to be talking about it. I don't even want to be thinking about it. I want to be dropping DMT in the mountains and staring at the aurora borealis. Around 11:30 a.m., Roth DMs his colleagues with news he's excited to share. Guess what? Jack just approved repeat offender for civic integrity. This new approach would create a system where 5 violations, aka strikes, would result in a permanent suspension. So how it always used to work on Twitter, prior to them absolutely wanting to get all of these right-wing people, and in particular Donald Trump, was they just took it on face value. And if you said something that was against the rules, they would put you in timeout like you were a naughty child. And how it works is, when you get suspended, when you get put in timeout, you would have like a little form pop up, and it would go, guess what? Like the Captain America video. So you've broken Twitter's rules. It was like that. Or if you're a boomer and from the UK, it was like that ridiculous Brass Eye Prison episode where they had celebrities go, you're gone and got yourself banged up, haven't you? I'd like to buy you a foaming brown nut ale. But that's a reference that about 2 people are going to get. But anyway, it was like that. You have to admit guilt to get back on Twitter, because you're only banned for 12 hours, but the countdown doesn't start until you say, I'm guilty. You can appeal, but no one ever replies. You can email Twitter, but no one ever replies. You must admit guilt. And that was how it worked. And so you would admit guilt, and it would basically set you up for a permanent ban somewhere down the road if you did the same thing. But also, if you were a famous Twitter account, if you were a celebrity, they had an entire whole segment dedicated to flagging the VITs. And so basically, you could have that 12-hour timeout time and time and time again. If you were a pleb, you probably got banned on your second or third account. That's how it worked. But now what Jack did under all of this pressure was, okay, 5 strikes for everyone. And this, by the way, is important because later, when we start talking about how they handled the great COVID debate, they implemented the 5 strikes rule multiple times, even on credible medical accounts. Now, don't get me wrong. As I've said multiple times, there was some shocking disinformation being peddled by absolute idiots and people, by the way, who have absolutely no right talking about these things. Like people who are just not qualified to talk about these things, telling people, you're definitely a cure, like, and all this dog shit, right? Like, I've got no issues with that. But as I said in a previous video, what isn't disinformation about COVID is you don't take a leading virologist and he goes, I actually think it's not as bad as people are making out. Ban him, suppress him. He's a man of science. He's entitled to that opinion. You, a fucking Twitter user, a Twitter administrator, a glorified janitor, do not get to, you should not get to suppress that opinion. You don't have the expertise to even argue against him. That is not disinformation for me. So these five strike rules were heavily abused during that time period, as you'll see later on. Progress, exclaims a member of Roth's trust and safety team. The exchange between Roth and the colleagues makes clear that they have been pushing Jack for greater restrictions on the speech Twitter allows around elections. The colleague wants to know if the decision means Trump can finally be banned. The person asks, does the incitement to violence aspect change that calculus? Now you will notice there has not been ever produced, no matter how critical people are of Trump, they have never been able to produce the smoking gun of what the incitement to violence is. Because an incitement to violence would be, guys, we've got to tear this up and let's stop them. Let's rise up. Gamers, rise up. That would be the incitement, but it doesn't exist. It's not there. And then you can see Yoel Roth says, Trump just continues to have his one strike. Roth's colleagues query about incitement to violence heavily foreshadows what will happen the following day. On January 8th, Twitter announces a permanent ban on Trump due to risk of further incitement to violence. Now, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to bring up the blog, but because you will see just how thin the whole initial premise of this suspension actually is. And it turns out it's actually literally thin. Look how it's actually transparent. After close review of recent tweets from the real Donald Trump account and the context around them, specifically how they are being received and interpreted on and off Twitter. Now, by the way, this also presupposes that just because I work at Twitter, I know how you're interpreting things. I know how they're being interpreted. I know inside your brain. Like, this is what I mean. The God complex on these tech company fucks is unreal. We have permanently suspended the account due to the risk of further incitement to violence. Remember, further also presupposes there was an incitement to violence, which you're about to see isn't true. In the context of horrific events this week, we made it clear on Wednesday that additional violations of the Twitter rules would potentially result in this very course of action. Our public interest framework exists to enable the public to hear from elected officials and world leaders directly. It is built on a principle that the people have a right to hold power to account in the open. However, we made it clear going back years, these accounts are not above our rules entirely and cannot use Twitter to incite violence, among other things. We will continue to be transparent around our policies and their enforcement. Now, again, just to remind you at this juncture, because I don't know how this VOD's going to get edited, they literally allowed the Ayatollah Khomeini to say death to Israel on Twitter, right? Unsuspended, not a problem. Louis Farrakhan, similar anti-Semitic things. Remember, Louis Farrakhan, by the way, is a man who has said he is not anti-Semite, he is anti-Termite. That is how he describes his view of Jewish people. He's allowed a Twitter account. He's not only allowed a Twitter account, when celebrities go and meet him, everyone's like, yeah, well, you know, he's a religious man. That's how fucking outrageous the double standard on Twitter is, by the way. Overview. On January 8th, 2021, President Donald J. Trump tweeted, the 75 million great American patriots who have voted for me, America First, and Make America Great Again, will have a giant voice long into the future. They will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape, or form. Shortly thereafter, the president tweeted, to all those who have asked, I will not be going to the inauguration on January 20th. That, my friends, is the tweet. That, my friends, is what everyone, all the media liars, all the DNC liars, all the liars at big tech, that you are supposed to believe is the incitement to violence. I'm going to ask the few people that have stuck around for what's been a pretty heavy slog of a stream. Anyone in chat, is that an incitement to violence by any stripe. I don't know how hard that you would have to tumble in your brain mentally, what gymnastics you would do to call that an incitement to violence. But that is actually the claim. That's the whole premise of the claim. And they even explain it. Due to the ongoing tensions in the United States and an uptick in the global conversation in regards to the people who violently stormed the Capitol on January 6th. By the way, remember, this was at a time, I'm not saying violence didn't take place. I've even said this. I'm comfortable labeling them, you're trespassing on government property. I'm happy calling you a domestic fucking terrorist. And that don't make me a bootlicker, right? But like, you want to play stupid fucking games, you're going to win some stupid fucking prizes. And if people tell you, you don't have a right to be here, guess what? You don't have a right to be there, and if you stick around, people might assume you're up to no good and treat you appropriately. That has to be just a baseline for a functional society, right? But I will also just add, okay, that when you have footage of policemen opening doors and you have a little old lady wandering around as if it's a fucking special day out and some dickhead with horns and a hat howling at the moon and talking about the benefits of a vegan diet and saying, hey, is everyone okay? This is kind of cool. It really downplays the whole, oh my God, it was Pearl Harbor. It was the Civil War. It was 9/11. It really downplays the message because that footage is there and we can all see it. It also doesn't help, by the way, that you keep saying five police officers died on January 6th when they didn't. In fact, the number of police officers who died on January 6th was zero, and there was a story pushed by the New York Times, which they since had to recant, about Officer Brian Sicknick. They literally told you on CNN, on MSNBC, repeating their reporting, saying that he'd had his head bashed in with a fire extinguisher, when in reality, he died days after, like 48 hours later, from respiratory complications. They're the facts. They are facts. They are irrefutable, undeniable facts. And yet these lies persist. I saw DNC politicians tweeting it out yesterday to the brave five officers. The other four officers committed suicide. Some of them months after the event, and the presupposition isn't police officers have a high instance of suicide. Go look it up, by the way. It'll surprise you. But that's not the presupposition. The presupposition is somehow the trauma of January 6th got to them so much they couldn't handle it anymore. And therefore, we have to count them as deaths on the day. Sorry, that's so beyond disingenuous. I can't do it. I can't come along for the ride. So even as someone who condemns the behaviour of everyone there, and I'm not even going to get into Ashley Babbitt. I feel that's too fraught an area for Twitch. But I'm going to say, at the end of the day, if you want to go into government buildings where there's armed guards who are telling you you cannot be here and things happen, you violated the law, you broke the law, there is a point where you cross a threshold and you go from being a protester into a rioter, into a domestic terrorist. There are degrees to this shit. And January the 6th was way over the fucking line. But also, is it fucking 9/11 times 1,000? No, and anyone who says that is sick. Anyway, these two tweets must be read in a broader context, Twitter say. Must be read in a broader context in the country. And the ways in which the president's statements can be mobilized by different audiences, including to incite violence, as well as in the context of a pattern of behavior from his account in recent weeks. After assessing the language in the tweets against our glorification of violence policy, again, I'll read you the tweet. The 75 million great American patriots who voted for me, America First and Make America Great Again, will have a giant voice long into the future. They will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape or form. And to all those who have asked, I will not be going to the inauguration on January 20th. How does any of that glorify violence? I don't give a fuck how you've worded the policy. None of that glorifies violence. It doesn't even address violence. It's got nothing to do with violence. Violence is not on the table. But they have determined that these tweets are in violation of the glorification of violence policy and the user real Donald Trump should be immediately suspended from the service. We assessed the two tweets referenced above under our glorification of violence policy, which aims to prevent the glorification of violence, just to stipulate that. Yeah, we figured that out. That's what the policy's for. That could inspire others to replicate violent acts and determine that they were highly likely to encourage and inspire people to replicate the criminal acts that took place on the US, the US Capitol on January 6, 2021. The determination is based on a number of factors, including... Now, this is where you get into the mind of the fucking lefty whack job. The lefty American whack job. This is, strap yourselves in. This is, again, this is all part of the narrative. You have to believe that you cannot say anything different. Even what I'm saying now, by the way, would be considered like insane radical stuff. Like, you know, for example, Jack Del Rio in the NFL. He's at the Washington Commanders, and he was talking about January 6th, and he was condemning it and saying it was bad, but he called it like a little fracas or something. He called it like a little rumpus or a fracas. He used the word like that. And he had to come out and apologize for not taking it seriously enough. That's where we're at in terms of, yeah, a dust-up. Thank you, Caragos. He called it a dust-up. And because he called it a dust-up, he had to publicly apologize. There was talks about him losing his job over that. I'm sorry, guys. It's insane. It's insane. I was there on the day. I had to block people. People were messaging me, what about your man Trump now? First of all, I'm not a Trump supporter. Second of all, I can't vote in your elections. Third of all, no, this isn't a coup. This isn't a coup d'etat. I'm sick of Americans telling me what a coup d'etat is. Like, you fund actual coup d'etats in every country. Most of them where there's functional democracies to get what you want. You, of all people, should know what a coup d'etat looks like, and it ain't that. So, let's do it. Strap yourselves in. Buckle up. Boop. The mind of the nutcase, right? Here it's time. President Trump's statement he will not be attending the inauguration is being received by a number of his supporters as further confirmation the election was not legitimate and is seen as him disavowing his previous claim made via two tweets. By the way, if you go look at those tweets, it was like he said there would be an orderly transition of power. So keep in mind, the whole premise is Trump refused to have an orderly transition of power and he was inciting people of violence when he'd already said, of course there'll be an orderly transition of power. But we ignore that. We have to ignore that part, and the fact he will not go to the inauguration is an incitement of violence. That's what you have to believe. Okay, great. Strapped in. The second tweet, again, the one where he says he won't go to the inauguration, may also serve as encouragement to those potentially considering violent acts that the inauguration would be a safe target because he will not be there. I mean, holy shit. Call fucking Stretch Armstrong because you're fucking breaking records for reaching. It's a joke. This is what they put out in the public. This has been publicly available for fucking since they did it. And nobody pulls their card on it. The fact that Trump said, I won't be there, is an incitement to violence because you know it's safe to target because he won't be there. Like all the other places he won't be. Because he's not Dr. Manhattan. And he can't, you know what I mean? That's an awful thought, by the way. A giant blue Trump with a little penis and tiny hands. Like, I'm sorry, Laurie, I must finish my work. We have the best unified theories and quantum mechanics. We really do. You're going to love it. I am your favourite superhero. It's absolutely awful. But anyway, he can't be everywhere, can he? So if he ever says, I'm not there, well, what's an incitement of violence? The use of the words American patriots to describe some of his supporters is also being interpreted as support for those committing violent acts at the US Capitol. Him calling his voters patriots, a word he used throughout all his campaign originally, throughout his time as president, now it's a problem. The mention of his supporters having a giant voice long into the future and that they will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape or form is being interpreted as further indication that President Trump does not plan to facilitate an orderly transition of power and instead that he plans to continue to support, empower and shield those who believe he won the election. It's like you're just imprinting what you want him to say on words that don't mean what he said. And then they added plans for future armed protests, and you'll notice they have to slip in the word armed, right? When I already told you so far, last time I checked, and I'll have to do a January 6th episode of Enemy of the People because the reporting around it has been a disgrace. But, you know, I think last time it was three, there had been three firearms offences. So plans for future armed protests have already begun proliferating on and off Twitter, including a proposed secondary attack on the US Capitol and state capitol buildings on January 17, 2021. Oh, no, sounds like something the feds might want to shut down and absolutely fuck all to do with Donald Trump or anything he said. I don't know. Think probably, by the way, spoiler, another thing, Richard Lewis, the coup master, right? Let me tell you, if you're planning to take down a government, probably don't go onto a government infiltrated social media platform and say, hey boys, how's the 17th for you? Yeah? Yeah? Well, yeah, I'll get the duct tape and, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, who the fuck, like, are you fucking bonkers? Are you dizzy? Like, what? You know, like, they're literally planning it on Twitter. Oh, I guess you can shut it down then. So what? No problem, right? You just go to their house. Oh, yeah, there he is. And you just arrest them. Solved. Problem solved. Crisis over. What a bunch of hysterical nonsense. As such, our determination is that the two tweets above are likely to inspire others to replicate violent acts, and there are multiple indicators that they are being received and understood as encouragement to do so. So again, those were the tweets that got him banned. That was the big incitement to violence. Just madness, right? Nobody, again, you'd have to be huffing paint to interpret it that way. It's the most disingenuous interpretation of words. You might not like what he's saying. You might not like the rhetoric. You might want him to condemn the January the 6th people more than he did. Totally agree with that point, by the way. But the bottom line is, was he inciting further violence with that tweet on January 8th? Which, by the way, it wasn't even the tweets prior to 6th that got him banned. It was that one on the 8th after the fact. On January 8th, Twitter says, its ban was based on specifically how Trump tweets have been received and interpreted. But in 2019, Twitter said it did not attempt to determine all potential interpretations of the content or its intent. This was, again, in another blog about world leaders, right? So this, the world leaders blog happened after the fact. That's where they were like, oh, you know, when Ayatollah Khomeini says death to Israel, what does he really mean? You know, it's like super hard to really, you know, how do you decipher that cryptic tweet? But of course, Donald Trump's shit, absolutely clear to the mind of every left-leaning psycho in a coastal city in America. The only serious concern we found expressed within Twitter over the implications of free speech and democracy of banning Trump came from a junior person in the organization. It was tucked away in a lower level Slack channel known as Site Integrity Auto. And you can see this might be an unpopular opinion, but one-off ad hoc decisions like this that don't appear rooted in policy are, in my honest opinion, a slippery slope and reflect an alternatively equally dictatorial problem. This now appears to be a fiat by an online platform CEO with a global presence that can gatekeep speech for the entire world, which seems unsustainable. Should have promoted that person. Probably, like, I hope Elon Musk has sorted them out. But yes, yeah, of course, it's hugely problematic what they've done, what they did up until this point, and the determinations that they've made. Twitter employees use this term one-off frequently in their Slack discussions. Its frequent use reveals significant employee discretion over when and whether to apply warning labels on tweets and strikes on users. Here are some examples. We don't need to look at those. Recall from the Twitter Files number 2 by Barry Weiss that according to Twitter staff, we control visibility quite a bit, and we control the amplification of your content quite a bit, and normal people do not know how much we do it. Twitter employees recognize the difference between their own politics and Twitter's terms of service, but they also engage in complex interpretations of content in order to stamp out prohibited tweets. Look at this series of exchanges over the Stop the Steal hashtag. Hey guys, hope you're doing okay and you were able to get some sleep. Can we, or have we already discussed blocking the Stop the Steal hashtag? It's furthering fake news in a dangerous way, from what I can tell. Yul Roth says, hey there, how y'all doing? We're proactively surfacing that content for review under civic integrity, and it should be blocked from type ahead and trends. If you're seeing it in either the latter two, let me know ASAP and I can fix it. And then I just saw the hashtag and then did a search on it, and all the content was appalling, so I don't think it's showing up elsewhere. Thank you for all you're doing. I'll flag it to the election squad. Remember that what I find appalling and what is TOS violations are not an exact overlap. Yeah. It's funny. That's your head of policy there. He goes on to say, Roth immediately DMs a colleague and asks that they add Stop the Steal and the QAnon conspiracy term Kraken to blacklist of terms to be deamplified. Roth's colleague objects to blacklisting Stop the Steal because it risks deamplifying counter speech that would validate the election. You can see there what he says. And indeed, notes Roth's colleague, a quick search of all the top Stop the Steal tweets and their counter speech. This is a broader thing, and I've talked about this quite a bit. There has to be a move back to the norm of you needing to not be a moron. You there. You have to not be a moron. You have to know when you're being lied to. It's your responsibility to disseminate all of the information that's out there in the world and come to the conclusion of what's factual or not. It's on you. It has to be on you. It shouldn't be on the tech companies that platform the information. It's certainly on the journalists, but even the best journalists in the world, the most honest journalists in the world, the most trustworthy journalists in the world are going to get things wrong from time to time. If a matter is important to you, it is up to you to do your own reading. And the excuse of it being a screeching nightmare, car crash, 24-hour news cycle, that's not good enough. You can't hide behind that. It has to be on you. It has to be on you. But what we're doing is we're increasing, like, applying nanny state models to services provided to us by tech platforms. The tech platform is essentially occupying a traditional government nanny state position and saying, you can't trust the people. The people are stupid. The people are stupid, so we have to sift through the information for them and only present them what's good. And sometimes we even have to lie to them for their own good, a la some of the stuff that happened around the start of COVID. Remember when they told you, don't wear masks, because masks were in short supply and medical staff couldn't get them, and then they mandated you had to wear a mask after the fact, creating confusion. It's up to you. It always has to be up to you. And what this proves is, actually, it works. That the Stop the Steal hashtag, yeah, it was full of conspiracy morons, but the overwhelming amount of speech were people ridiculing the idea. We all think it's a meme round on this channel, right? You know, we all say stop the count, stop the steal. We joke about it all the time. It was embarrassing. And we've arrived at that conclusion because we're not idiots. I don't need Twitter to fucking help me get there. I'll get there fine by myself. They add here, it turns out that even blacklisting Kraken was less straightforward than they thought, because Kraken, in addition to being a QAnon conspiracy theory based on the mythological Norwegian sea monster, is also the name of a cryptocurrency exchange that was allow-listed, because they love crypto, didn't they, Twitter? They don't talk about that so much now. Jack was big on his crypto, big on his Web3. Remember when they even gave you a special little shape on your avatar if you'd bought one of them bored apes or whatever the fuck they're called? Employees struggle with whether to punish users who share screenshots of Trump's deleted January 6th tweets, because obviously people were doing what I've just done and said, look at the tweets. How is this incitement to violence? And you can see there, fuck off. Oh my God, even Twitter says it's inciting violence. This is people. Blah, blah, blah. Guess what? Just like they did with the Hunter Biden story. We should bounce these tweets with a strike. We should ban people. So, in other words, we banned Donald Trump. And if you remember when they shut his account down, by the way, what happens when an account shut down? You can't see any of his tweets. And man alive, when Donald Trump got banned, it was like we lost the fucking the Library of Alexandria, just of all the shitposts and all the hilarious things he said about how Coca-Cola's garbage and Rosie O'Donnell's a fat pig and all these like other just fucking hilarious, you know, happy Thanksgiving. And even to the losers and the haters, we lost it all. It was all gone. You couldn't see him. Like tears in the rain, gone forever. That's a problem when what you're doing is impugning someone for not doing something or accusing somebody of doing something. They have to change that. A social media platform, particularly where politicians or journalists are involved, they shouldn't be able to just memory hole things people said or did and reconstruct the narrative. It has to be preserved. It has to be archived. It's important. It matters. You can't have it both ways. Remember, a judge ruled Donald Trump couldn't block people on Twitter, even losers like the fucking Krasensteins who were back, or William Legate. He couldn't block those people, or journalists. He couldn't block them because he's the president. He's a political figure. They have a right to be able to read his tweets, even on his personal account. But what, Twitter can just nuke every tweet he ever made? And that's within their right. Guys, these two things are not compatible. You don't even have to be a genius to figure that out. So you need to pick one and fucking stick with it. But yeah, Twitter were actually talking about banning anyone that showed what Donald Trump had actually said or done. And that says to me, they knew, you know, that enough people are going to be like, fucking hell, this is a bit shit, isn't it? And remember, not everyone is a fucking insane, entrenched in the culture war American, like, you know, brainwashed by MSNBC. As I've said it many times to American friends, they don't get it. The rest of Europe just rolls its fucking eyes at you. We find all this comical. It's why I can say to my audience, who are like, you know, fully awakened Americans and Europeans and people from all over the world, I can say all this stuff without it like ruffling too many feathers, because at the end of the day, this is not you know, this is not the behavior of a functional country. Imagine coming from Denmark or fucking Norway, and in Finland, what was it, like, Sanna Marina, or however you say her name, like, there was, like, a brief scandal, like, she might have gone out and had a party, and it, like, dominated the news cycle for 2 weeks. That wouldn't even make a blip in the American fucking, it wouldn't even make a fucking blip in the American news cycle, and she hadn't even done anything. She had to tearfully take a drugs test, because she might have done cocaine. Meanwhile, in fucking American politics, it's like, you know, they're at fucking Bohemian Grove, wiping the fucking blood off their lips, going, oh, well, what's up, like, well, what's this, yeah, you know. It's fucking insane. Your country's too insane. I'm joking about that bit, by the way. Please don't come and get me. It's just so mental. At the end of the day, like, you know, people have to be fucking a bit skeptical and you know, mock all of these things like this. But you can't just ban people for 12 days because they're like, Twitter took this action, but this is what actually happened. What if a user dislikes Trump and objects to Twitter censorship? The tweet still gets deleted, but since the intention is not to deny the election result, no punishing strike is applied. If there are instances where the intent is unclear, please feel free to raise. So in other words, what they then started doing was, if somebody said, it's an outrage Donald Trump has been banned because look at his tweet, they would ban them. But if somebody said, oh my God, look at Donald Trump's tweet, good on Twitter for banning them, they wouldn't ban them. They're both showing the tweet, they're both sharing the information. Now they were issuing suspensions, temporary suspensions for users based on whether or not they were Trump supporters, essentially. Around noon, a confused senior executive in advertising sales sends a direct message to Roth sales executive. Jack says, we will permanently suspend Trump if our policies are violated after a 12-hour account lock. What policies is Jack talking about? Any policy violation. What happens next is essential to understanding how Twitter justified banning Trump. The sales executive says, are we dropping the public interest policy now? And Roth, 6 hours later, in this specific case, we're changing our public interest approach for his account. And you can see it's there. Apologies for the slow reply. I've been back-to-back all day today. In this specific case, we're changing our public interest approach for his account to say any violation would result in suspension. We aren't completely getting rid of the public interest approach, though we do have work planned on revisions to it. So if you remember, the public interest approach was that we will not ban world leaders or serious political figures or other super important to the fabric of society, you know, celebrities and individuals. But for Trump, we're going to make an exception. The ad exec is referring to the public interest policy. I've just explained that. Roth pushes for a permanent suspension of Representative Matt Gaetz, even though it doesn't quite fit anywhere. Duh. It's kind of a test case for the rationale for banning Trump. I'm trying to talk the Twitter safety team into removal, as it's a conspiracy that incites violence. You can see here, what's the latest on the Antifa claims? Now remember, Twitter's been a hotbed of planning and activity for Antifa. I kind of go back and forth on this in the sense that I don't think Antifa is a big bad. In, you know, I've not really come along for that ride either. But I will say, if you're in any fringe group that plans violence out in the open, it should be treated the same irrespective of the goals. And also, I will just add, look, I've done economics, I've done media, right? Look, you can say anti-fascist, but if you're putting on, you know, if you're putting on balaclavas and going around smashing people's heads in the middle of the night or the middle of the day if you're in Portland with sticks and bats, it doesn't matter that you call yourself anti-fascist. Doesn't matter to me. Sorry. You're still the bad guys in my eyes. But anyway, you know, there was a lot of people like really overstating the potential harm of Antifa and how big they were and how bad they were. And this was really being amplified by just a lot of Twitter accounts, again, having that illusion of reach and the illusion of influence. And Matt Gaetz and people like that were getting in a tizzy about it. But it's absolutely... should be absolutely fair game to call people out and talk about it. If you're going to allow a group to plan, you've got to allow a group to fucking, and other people to say, look at this group that's planning that shit over there. But anyway, they wanted to ban him, and you can see, I'm trying to talk our safety team into treating it as incitement, and I think we'll get it over the line from removal, because it's a conspiracy that incites violence, saying, you know, obviously that Antifa are doing all these, like, bad, malevolent things. And obviously, our good friend, Ms. Gaddy, was directionally okay with it, because of course she was. She was the root of almost all the censorship on the platform. Around 2:30, comms executives DM Roth and said they don't want to make a big deal of the QAnon ban to the media, because they fear if we push this, it looks like we're trying to offer up something in place of the thing everyone wants, which was, of course, the Trump ban. So they didn't even want to talk about that in QAnon. There were a number of QAnon accounts that were taken down. There was some coverage of it, but it didn't go widespread. I'm pretty sure they probably privately talked to a lot of journalists through back channels and said, don't write about this, because we don't want to have to explain why we're not banning Trump for the millionth time. That evening, a Twitter engineer DMs Roth to say, I feel a lot of debates around exceptions stem from the fact that Trump's account is not technically different from anybody else, and yet we treat it differently due to his personal status without corresponding Twitter rules. Now, look, this is nonsense. You can't treat a president or a prime minister or a world leader of any kind, you can't treat them the same as an average pleb. You just can't, because everything they say is substantial and important and historical. You know, it sounds crazy to think, but I like to hope 100 years from now, when we're all dead and dust, unless, of course, you find a way to stop entropy in the meantime, which will be after I'm gone. Maybe some of you Zoomers will live forever, and God help us all. But I like to think from 100 years from now, people are going to look back at this time, and it's not going to be, oh my God, look how dark it was. It's going to be, look how silly and pathetic American politics was in the year 2020. That's what I sincerely hope. Roth's response hints at how Twitter would justify deviating from its long-standing policy. To put a different spin on it, policy is one part of the system of how Twitter works. We ran into the world changing faster than we were able to adapt the product or the policy. The evening of January 7th, the same junior employee who expressed the unpopular opinion about the ad hoc decisions that don't appear rooted in policy speaks one last time before the end of the day. Earlier the day, the employee wrote, my concern is specifically surrounding the unarticulated logic of the decision by FB, which is Facebook. Facebook, if you remember, they suspended him too, and came out and said, oh yes, absolutely, we stand in line with Twitter and everybody else. That space fills with the idea, conspiracy theory question mark, that all internet moguls sit around like kings casually deciding what people can and cannot see, and of course we know that to be true. The employee notes later in the day, and Will Oramus noticed the inconsistency too, and then linked to an article for 10 at Medium called Facebook chucked its own rule books to ban Trump. The underlying problem, writes Oramus, is that the dominant platforms have always been loath to own up to their subjectivity, because it highlights the extraordinary unfettered power they wield over the global public square. And this is it, obviously. They always say, oh, we're completely impartial, we would never let our politics inform our policy decisions. All the while, by the way, of course, they're doing deals with the same politicians that they serve. Like, if we get in trouble for this, you have to take it easy on us. You have to make sure you keep winning and we'll help you win, but you can never put us on the stands for all the shit we've done. You can never investigate us, never penalise us, and also some tax breaks would be really nice. That's what's going on the entire time with this shit. But the bottom line is, we know that not only are they not impartial, we also know that something has happened in this part of society with the internet. We know something has happened where a few companies have a really inordinate amount of power and influence, and it's being now leveraged by governments, and there is quid pro quo going on between the two groups, and we know that that's happening, and that's got to get looked at. That isn't healthy. There's just no two ways about it. Facebook suspension of Trump now puts Twitter in an awkward position. If Trump does indeed return to Twitter, the pressure on Twitter will ramp up to find a pretext on which to ban him as well. And then it says Barry Weiss will show tomorrow. That is exactly what happened in the Twitter files, part 5.